America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey there, Nerd Clan. Did you know that this is the last chance to get your Halloween-themed Harry Potter merchandise at the Mary and Blake store in time for the big day? So head on over to themaryandblakestore.com to see what best fits your Halloween celebration. For me, it's pumpkins, potions, polyjuice, and Potter. Way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners, and let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I just have to say, Mary, after about 30 or 40 episodes of the Potterverse, you're really getting that timing down really well.
Oh, thank you.
Of the step into the night, the flighty temptress thing, and then the music soars, and man, it's almost like you're a professional.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're getting paid to do this.
Hey,
who would have thunk?
And it's not like I have an in-home producer next to my side, you know, raising that volume perfectly.
That's true.
Look at you go. So, of course, really excited as we are delving into the namesake of this book, Chapter 16, The Chamber of Secrets. And, you know, there were a lot of good fun bits to really sink your teeth into and moments. But Snape stepped forward.
"Just the man," he said. "The very man. A girl has been snatched by the monster, Lockhart, taken into the Chamber of Secrets itself. Your moment has come at last."
Lockhart blanched. "That's right, Gilderoy," chipped in Professor Sprout. "Weren't you just saying last night that you've known all along where the entrance of the Chamber of Secrets is? Yes, didn't you tell me that you were sure you knew what was inside of it?" piped up Professor Flitwick. "Did I? I didn't recall."
"I certainly remember you were saying you were sorry you hadn't had a crack at the monster before Hagrid was arrested," said Snape. "Didn't you say that the whole affair had been bungled and that you should have had been given free rein from the first?"
Lockhart stared around at his stony-faced colleagues. "I really never. You may have misunderstood."
"We'll leave it to you then, Gilderoy," said Professor McGonagall. "Tonight will be an excellent time to do it. We'll make sure everyone's out of the way. You'll be able to tackle the monster all by yourself. A free rein at last."
Love, love, love this, because now it feels like all of the professors either have known or now know that Lockhart is a disaster. A total disaster.
Yes.
And not only do they know it, they're calling him out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And McGonagall even goes as far as to say later on, yeah, okay, now he's out from underneath us.
Yeah.
Let's actually get to work here. So, Mary, before we get into the rest of the show, or do you want to save this? I was going to say, do you think that the professors knew the entire time, or is this something that they're just realizing now?
I think that they've had suspicions, and probably each of them had their own experience with Lockhart that made them be like, I don't know how I feel about this, Jabroni.
Yep, yep. All right. Well, I also wanted to say that today I'm wearing my Professor Lockhart free of charge. Wearing my free of charge shirt just for everybody in the at jointhenerdclan.com and everybody that's watching us live.
All
right
the Lockhart
now.
Fans.
All the Lockhart fans. All 10 of us. Yeah. So yeah, get yours at the Mary and Blake store.
Yes.
Just awesome.
Well, of course, you can find out all of our other podcasts at maryandblake.com to find that. But we want to just take a quick moment to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. This is an amazing community of people who, from the goodness of their hearts, spend as little as they would for a cup of coffee once a month to make sure that the Mary and Blake podcasts keep coming. And I wanted to make sure that you all knew, because tomorrow, This Is Us starts back up.
Yes, it does.
And I know a lot of you love This Is Us. And we have a companion podcast called This Is Us 2, T-O-O. And that's going to be happening every single Wednesday night. We're going to be going live on our social media accounts around 8:15 to talk all about the latest episode of This Is Us. Don't worry, Potterverse is going to continue. But I will let you know that in between Chamber of Secrets and Prisoner of Azkaban, we are taking a very brief hiatus as we are going to be binging The Crown. So if you yourself love The Crown, that show on Netflix, you may want to be at jointhenerdclan.com. Why, Blake?
Especially because if you love The Crown, only the members at jointhenerdclan.com are going to get Keep Calm and Crown On, our podcast about The Crown. So I'm very excited about it. So make sure you do go there, jointhenerdclan.com, and check that out and get access to it. We'll be doing it the week of the 15th, I think. Is that the...
Yes.
Yes, that's...
It
that's
comes out on the 15th, yes. And we'll start podcasting about it on the 17th.
In 1 week, we will do every single episode of season 4 of The Crown.
We're probably going to be British by the time we're done.
We're going to be brain dead by the time we're done. So we'll see how that turns out. Mavin, are you ready to get into the show?
Oh my goodness gracious. Yes, we are.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Okay, it's time to step into the Chamber of Secrets.
You gotta let the music run. Now you can go. It's gotta come down a little bit. It's gotta come down. We were just talking about how professional you were like 5 minutes ago.
Okay. I'm only professional some of the time.
Okay, now you can go.
Okay, so bad news bears, when McGonagall's in charge, there's still exams. When Dumbledore's in charge, he's like, oh, we had a rough day. Exams are canceled. McGonagall's like, oh, you're all scared for your lives? You should be, because exams are still on and we're bumping them up early. So Harry and Ron almost get to hear from Ginny about some super special stuff, but Percy steps in and stops it. And then we find out that Ginny's taken by the monster.
Yep.
Lockhart says, oh, sure, I can save the day. But really, he ends up telling Harry and Ron the truth that he's been a fraud all along. Dun, dun, dun. And they go down to the Chamber of Secrets and he tries to seal Ron's wand, which backfires, and brave, brave Harry goes to find Ginny Weasley in the Chamber of Secrets with a 20-foot basilisk snake, thanks Hermione, alone.
What do you think about this chapter, Mavin?
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, like it's moving,
non-stop.
It's pumping.
Non-stop for all my Hamilton fans.
Oh, good one, I like that. I have to say, there are some logical issues that I have with this chapter.
Of course.
No, but I mean, don't be like that. I'm just saying.
I think there's more logical issues that happen in the movie version of this chapter.
Oh, I totally agree. I'm just saying there are just some things that happen in this chapter where I'm like, oh, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay, well, let's go dig through it, baby.
They say they're going to go tell McGonagall about what they learned from Moaning Myrtle.
Mm-hmm.
But even before that, McGonagall says, listen, we're going to get all these people and the Mandrakes are coming and we're going to revive them.
Yes.
And guess what? We're probably going to figure out who and what did this to them. Yet the boys are still like, we got to sneak off and go talk to Moaning Myrtle, when they're going to get the information the very next day. But that aside, they say they're going to go talk to McGonagall. They don't do it. And I know they don't do it because of the meeting
With all the teachers.
Yes. That still doesn't make all that much sense, because they still could have talked to McGonagall regardless.
They would have gotten in trouble.
Like, that's ever stopped them.
Let's see. Does McGonagall ever give them a break? No.
But, oh, yes, she does.
I mean, none of
them. Then, not only that, they decide, all right, well, you know what? Who cares? We're going to get in trouble anyway. Might as well just go and figure it out.
It's Ron's sister.
I know. But instead of going to McGonagall, the person who's actually in charge, they go to Lockhart.
These are 12-year-old boys in a moment of desperation.
You think they would go to McGonagall, the person they originally planned to speak to in the beginning. Now, I agree. Victoria here says, I think we've established that the boys do not trust those teachers. Agreed. And I'm not the one suggesting that they do. They are, in text. They're suggesting, hey, let's go tell McGonagall. Now, if this was just me making this up, I would agree. It would be a straw man argument. But it's not. They're the ones suggesting it. And they do go tell the teacher. It just doesn't make any sense that they're telling that teacher. It feels off to me. Do you think that's a fair criticism, Mary, or no?
That they chose poorly of which teacher to ask for help?
That they abandoned their plan, telling McGonagall, for no reason.
Well, I would beg to differ that McGonagall's the one that's dropping the ball. If you know, if all of these teachers, McGonagall, Flitwick, Sprout, and Snape, the four of them probably could have defeated this basilisk. And instead, they're just like, oh, well, Ginny Weasley's gone. School's over. If you want to try, Lockhart, no problem. The Hogwarts Express is coming tomorrow
but
anyway.
They know he's full of crap anyway.
Yes, but like I just feel like they sit back and put their feet up. And they're just like, we tried.
Well, I failed. I think they do what they can.
Like what?
Which is getting all the students in their houses away from the basilisk or away from whatever has been doing this. Because they know that any student that is out and about is in danger. It's kind of like the quarantine. If you're out and about, you're in danger. Stay in your homes. So I think they did what they thought was right. And I kind of agree with them. Like, get everybody in their homes. Don't come out until tomorrow when we get everybody all together. All the teachers will be there and we get you out of the school. Because we can't keep going. But what do you think would have happened if the boys did tell McGonagall?
I think that this would have been solved a lot better.
Yes. And that's the only reason why...
I think she would have believed them.
And that's the only reason why they tell Lockhart and not McGonagall. Because if they tell McGonagall, the book's over. Mm. That's it. That's the narrativium that exists. And I'm finding a lot more narrativium in this book than in The Sorcerer's Stone. Like, things happen in this book because they need to happen for them, for the book to continue.
What I find actually quite interesting in this, so as I was reading, because I hear you, it's like, why wouldn't they go to the head of the house? You think that maybe she'd be checking in on the Gryffindor common room, you know, every other hour or so. She's currently the headmistress. Like, why wouldn't they go to McGonagall? But what I find is quite interesting is it is Ron who decides for them to go with Lockhart. Ron, who has, you know, thought very lowly of Lockhart left and right. And
yes.
The reason that I think that he's doing this is I think that it is just sheer desperation. You know, like he's been racking his brain. He and his brothers are like, what are we ever going to do? And it is Ron who has called this guy every single name under the sun for this entire book. He says, do you know what? Said Ron, I think we should go and see Lockhart. Tell him what we know. He's going to try and get to the chamber. We can tell him where we think it is. Tell him that there's a basilisk there. And because Harry couldn't think of anything else to do and because he wanted to be doing something, he agreed. So I just found it interesting that it wasn't Harry's idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ron. And to me, that just screams young desperation. They are sleep deprived. They're worried. And they know this teacher, this adult,
mm-hmm.
is going to do it. And even though they have not been wowed by this teacher, they've actually been the opposite, that maybe he truly can help. It's like, maybe he can do it.
One of the things that happens, I think, is... Actually, no, I know what happens. McGonagall says, all right, this guy's out now. Like, finally, we can actually do something. Like, let's gets him out from underneath us. The boys hear that. The boys hear that, and yet they still show some kind of confidence in Lockhart. Again, this is just one of the logical issues that's established in this chapter that just... doesn't make a whole ton of sense.
I know, but it's a 12-year-old boy.
That's true. One of the things I think we keep doing is, well, at least I keep doing, certainly, is as I'm reading this, I'm like aging up.
Yeah.
Harry. I
He's a seventh grader.
I think of
if
Harry.
You're lucky.
I think of Harry right now in the Chamber of Secrets as I would see him in like the Order of the Phoenix.
Yes. In which he is much more logical and he does take his time. In these early books, Harry just acts a lot in general, but in the latter books he does take a lot of time and digest. And yep. In these early books it's like, all right, let's try this thing and let's try this thing. And
why do you think the boys, even prior to the McGonagall announcement
mm-hmm.
about Ginny, why do you think they go to Moaning Myrtle? Like, why did instead of just saying, okay, hey, look, like, they're going to figure it out. They're getting these people waking up tomorrow. Like, they're going to be woke.
But who's to say if they definitely will tell you who the attacker was? They want to hear exactly, because if they can find it a day earlier, that's possibly a life that could be saved. If they could find out exactly from Moaning Myrtle, then it may help a little bit more. And I just think that these boys want to, they're like Scooby-Doo, you know, they just want to get down to who done it and they want to be the ones that know about it first.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that they've been clamoring after all year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a Gryffindor.
This is totally Griffin.
Like, they're like, okay, we could find out maybe tomorrow, or we could find out right now. Let's do it now.
I can kind of, you know what? As much as I don't like the choice, I kind of see it. I kind of see why the choice was made.
I would have done it. It's like, study or go ask Moaning Myrtle who killed her.
That's true. That's true.
And we're 12.
And like, the other thing too is that they know that Lockhart is not that reliable, because he's the one saying, I'm out on this. We already know it was Hagrid. I got stuff to do. I got things doing. Ron even says, yeah, like, curl your hair, probably. Why the heck? Even after, and that's how they sneak away. They're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, you don't have to watch us. It's fine. Why in all that is good would they go to Lockhart?
Because they're actually, you know, they're sixth graders. So think about that. Think of sixth graders.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I don't know. He's already on his way. He's already going. Maybe mm-hmm. he does know where the entrance is. Let's just try. What could go wrong? What could go wrong?
Everything.
And you know, I'm not going to lie. I think Professor McGonagall has disappointed Harry.
How so?
Well, back in book one, you know, they've tried to tell her things before mm-hmm. and tried to insist, like, this is a big deal. And she's kind of pushed him aside. Professor McGonagall has never been the one who's been like, oh, do you know more about what's up? It's actually been Snape who's like, I don't, and Snape and Dumbledore who've been like, I think there's more than you're telling me. Mm-hmm. But McGonagall has just kind of been like, of course it's always you guys. You're the ones always in trouble.
Sure.
Oh, we need to talk to Dumbledore. No, you don't. You're 11-year-olds. Like, you can wait.
That's a fair criticism.
You know? It's like, why is she going to take me seriously now? And I'm going to tell her that I went to the Forbidden Forest and asked a giant spider.
But they're the ones who suggested to do it to begin with. Again, I'm not creating a straw man here. This happens within text. They're the ones who plan to go to McGonagall. They're the ones who suggest that that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and then they hear that Ginny Weasley, Ron's little sister, and let's be real, already the object of Harry's desire, is taken and possibly dead. You can't think logically.
But what about that distinction makes you choose Lockhart over McGonagall?
Because your brain is on autopilot and Lockhart is going. And you're like, all right, let's at least try that. You know? They're desperate.
Yeah.
They're depressed and desperate. And they're like 12.
But this...
Can you just give these boys a break?
Well, actually, I want to move on to the next thing.
Thank goodness.
This is all after the teary acknowledgement mm-hmm. of the boys' relationship with Hermione.
Oh, yes.
So that would suggest to me that they understand McGonagall.
Through McGonagall,
yeah.
You're saying, okay.
Yeah. They, McGonagall has an understanding of their relationship with Hermione
mm-hmm.
and their... urgency of trying to see this thing over. That to me means she would be more sympathetic than she was in book one when she just dismissed, you know, two kids.
I think that this was McGonagall acting out of duress and made a poor choice, in my opinion. I think she's crying because she's overwhelmed. She's only been headmaster for like, what, 5-6 months. Things are just going terribly wrong. Sure, you can go see him. Like, I just felt like, you know, when you're just so burnt out and you're like, fine, yes, you can eat cake for dinner. Like,
yes.
That's how I feel.
That's
like,
true.
Honestly,
that's
I think
how we
that
were
that's,
on Sunday.
I think that that's where McGonagall's crying, even though it's like, oh, their friendship. No, when I read this, I was like, no, this is a tired woman who did not sign up to be headmaster, didn't get the bonus, mm-hmm. did not get the paid vacation.
Oh, no way.
Mm-mm.
She should have been gone by now.
Seriously.
She should have been to Majorca like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, she had to cancel that trip. and it's like, oh my, like, fine. Eat cake. Go see Hermione. Like, and
I don't know.
And they're purebloods. So, like, whatever. You're not going to die.
Harry's not a pureblood, is he?
I mean, he's like a mixed blood, but in this kind of sense, he's not muggle-born. I just think that that's McGonagall.
Oh, here it is. Here's the way that it reads. Of course, she said, and Harry, amazed, saw a tear glistening in her beady eye. Of course, I realize that this has been the hardest on the friends of those who have been... Well, I quite understand. Yes, Potter, of course you may visit Miss Granger. I will inform Professor Binns where you've gone. Tell Madame Pomfrey I have given my permission. Harry and Ron walked away, hardly daring to believe that they have avoided detention. As they turned the corner, they distinctly heard Professor McGonagall blow her nose. That to me reads more sympathy than resignation.
No, I know. This is my canon in my head.
Oh, okay.
This is me making it up.
Okay.
Being like, how does McGonagall actually feel at this moment?
Yeah.
She just wants a nap in Doritos.
Oh, yes.
That's all she wants.
So much melatonin. So many Doritos.
And here Harry's like, oh, she's crying because she feels so bad. She's crying because she does not like this job.
And then it's followed up, though, by a really interesting comment. One that makes me feel really bad for McGonagall. And almost, oh, like.
Ooh, it's paining you to say this. What is it?
Almost like, what are you doing? Like, you just took advantage of an old lady. That, said Rod fervently, was the best story you've ever come up with. That just, it feels a little...
No, that's Ron. Ron isn't always tactful. This is why I think that I'm Ron every once in a while. Right? Like sometimes I say things that
I know we're not going to say it, but you made a comment when we were having faux Thanksgiving with your family on Sunday that, you know, Mary had a butterbeer or two and said something to her mom that just really shouldn't have been said.
She took it well.
She did take it well. I will admit that. She took it in stride. As a matter of fact, I think that she almost didn't hear it.
Mary referred to her mom as a name
that probably shouldn't.
Well, she was acting that way, and she was trying to apologize, and you didn't seem to comprehend what she was trying to say. So I said she's apologizing for being a bae.
Yes,
because you were like, "What are you trying to say? You're acting so weird." And she was like, "Well, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for, you know, how I just acted and how I did this." And you were looking at her like cross-eyed, and I was like, "She's apologizing for her poor behavior that she was being a bae."
Oh, man.
This is why I sadly am Ron Weasley. Like, if someone was reading it, they'd be like, oh, Ron.
If there was a sound that I could have made at the time, it would have been this.
Shame.
It would have been that.
Yeah.
Because it's beyond like the...
I don't think she heard me. And I wasn't calling her that. I was trying to put it into... terms that you would understand what she was trying to
say.
Fair
enough, but anyway, yeah, you are Ron. The more and more I think about it, you're totally wrong.
I know.
Another thing that I want to bring up too is the
Ron is Russell in Up.
Yes, totally.
This Horcrux makes my arm hurt.
Yeah, which one? My knee hurts.
Yeah.
Another bit of logic that kind of pops up is the likelihood of no one noticing a note in Hermione's hand.
You know whose fault that is.
You got to defend that one.
Madame Pomfrey.
She is HIPAA compliant.
But she is not a thorough nurse.
How so?
She didn't take the paper out of Hermione's hand. You would have thought that she would have, like, given her a sponge bath by now. And that girl's been petrified since Christmas and she's in puberty. So stinky. Like, in the movie, they're wearing the same clothes. Do they not defecate? Like, what is going on? I'm trying to use nurse terms. Do they have a urinal? Like, what is going on?
Oh,
Madame Pomfrey did not examine her patient. Everyone was like, oh, is anything wrong with her? Any evidence as whatsoever could be going on? Nope. Nope. I mean, I love Madame Pomfrey. She does a dang good job. You got some broken bones.
Uh-huh.
You get bit by a dragon.
I'll take care of that right away.
Petrified. She's clueless.
You want a sponge bath? Mm-mm.
Oh,
I don't get paid for that.
She is like, why? I wish I could be in St. Mungo's. They do not smell as bad.
Maybe she was supposed to vacation with McGonagall over in Mallorca.
That's why she put the tarp back up around Hermione, because she was stanky. She had the stanky leg.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
What's that thing that our son loves? The Febreze air?
Oh, goodness. What is it?
He sprayed the whole can again.
Yeah.
It's Air Effects. Yeah. Oh my gosh. We don't usually watch commercials that often. I think maybe we were watching Harry Potter, but it was on like a network, so there were commercials broken in. And every other commercial was Febreze Air Effects. And my kid became obsessed. Mom, why don't you have that? Why don't you have it? Our house is stinky. We need it. So I bought it, and he used it in one day.
He said, what does he really say, Mary? A house smells like...
Farts.
Farts.
Yeah, well, you're the culprit, kiddo.
I know. He's dropping bombs.
Okay. Let's continue because these poor people are all set with us. Let's get out of Hermione.
Oh,
she has stop.
That's what she said.
Let's get out of there. All right.
Fine, but at least acknowledge that it's one of those things that, like, that.
Madame Pomfrey
very
dropped
unlikely.
The ball.
Yes,
Madame Pomfrey dropped the ball.
That's because the story needed her to drop the ball.
Can we have a moment?
Yes, absolutely.
For these teachers' reactions.
Yes.
When they enter the teacher's room. Okay, and the boys went there to get McGonagall, of course, and then they hid. And Professor, when McGonagall tells them, she says a student has been taken by the monster right into the chamber itself. Professor Flitwick let out a squeal. Professor Sprout clapped her hands over her mouth, and Snape gripped the back of the chair very hard. Asked, "Are you sure?" And McGonagall says, "Yes." You know, he left this note. Professor Flitwick burst into tears. Madam Hooch. Where the heck was she been all this time?
Drinking some bourbon.
But she's back. She's nervous. And they figure out who it is. And I just thought that this was such a, like, these people don't have their leader. These professors don't have their leader. They've got this monster terrorizing them. They know that their jobs are at stake. They know that the safety of the children are at stake. And now it's actually happened. And each of these teachers has taught Ginny Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pure blood, which... makes it even scarier,
right?
Because now the variable that they thought was, you know, okay, the mudbloods can possibly, you know, the muggle-born can possibly get petrified or killed. Now it's all out the door.
Now everything is out. And in the midst of it all, we still have this subplot or substructure that is happening beneath the surface, which is Percy. Percy is still doing things that are very odd. And as much as I don't like the logic of this chapter, I do appreciate the attention to detail and the engineering of this subplot with Percy throughout the entire book. If you were to break down this chapter... I would be hard-pressed to say that you would be wrong if you suggested that it was definitely Percy that was the person who was in charge of the chamber.
Opening
of
the
secrets.
Chamber. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way that he's been acting, the way that he has been... the way that he's turning Ginny down, saying, if you're done, take a hike. And then he say, oh yeah, she saw me she saw me doing something. It wasn't the Chamber of Secrets though. No. No way. Wasn't that at all. I promise. It was something else. But don't worry about it. It's fine. That to me is, I mean, like, that's your typical way of suggesting, oh yeah, it's this person. But on the other hand, there's a great bit of self-awareness from the author when she brings up Lockhart he's in his office and he's packing everything up. He says to Harry, books are misleading.
Mm-hmm.
I find that simply awesome because in parallel with the Percy subplot, we have the stuff going on with Lockhart at the same time. And she's now, the author is revealing that Lockhart is a mess.
Yep.
You kind of believed that he was a fumbling idiot, but you never believed the fact that he was actually doing these terrible things by stealing people's stories. And she, the author, has laid all this out the entire book. And I find that story engineering fantastic. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. When you just said fumbling, I thought of bumbling, and it took me to Goblet of Fire when Professor McGonagall's teaching the kids how to dance, and it's like bumbling, blah, 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 baboons, and like Fred and George go back and forth. So sorry, I just had like this little moment. But yes, I agree. Yes. Well done, author, with Percy.
Yes. And then in Lockhart at the same time.
Yes.
And building up to that moment of the reveal, building up to...
This was unexpected. The how bad Lockhart is. And then as he really comes out and is like, I literally did none of it, but I'm extraordinary at this particular charm. And now I'm going to take care of your memory as well, since I'm packing up. And this, of course, is when Harry reached for his wand just in time. Lockhart had barely raised his when Harry bellowed, Expelliarmus! Lockhart was blasted backward, falling over his trunk. His wand flew high into the air. Ron caught it and flung it out of the open window. Imagine just being downstairs. Shouldn't have let Professor Snape teach us that one, said Harry furiously, kicking Lockhart's trunk aside. Let's just like raise an invisible glass for Professor Snape for teaching Harry once again his like signature spell that he's now used not only to disarm
Draco, yep,
to disarm Lockhart, he even uses it against Voldemort. Like, this is his most important spell, and he even like gives Snape the credit. This is a nice book because it gives Snape a moment.
Yes.
You know, like, he is not the target whatsoever. He just gets like dripped in here or there where he still has those little interactions. But on the flip side, Harry has now used this spell twice and accredited Snape for it.
Sure. You know? It's again, it's that story engineering that the author is doing that is right in front of your face, but because you are looking at the story through Harry colored glasses, you don't see the benefit that Snape is giving him until it's said to you or until it really means something much later on.
Except then when Harry uses Expelliarmus on Snape in the next book.
Yeah, not so great.
Not great.
Not great, Bob.
The boys, of course, come on down to the bathroom to go see Moaning Myrtle when they have Lockhart with them. And she gets to go into how she died, and she's so excited that this is something that they're asking her. And they go to the sink, and I love that it takes Harry a couple of times to like open the Chamber of Secrets, that he has to look at the snake carved into the bottom and like squint and kind of like move his head to make it look like it's moving. Yeah, yeah. He has to like fake it for himself.
He has to convince himself that it's alive.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have you had to do that, you know, to convince yourself you're okay? I mean, I know I need to do that when I'm getting a shot or having my blood drawn. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to just pretend like, this is going to sound so silly.
Hold on, let me get my nerd button ready.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When I'm getting a shot, when I'm getting blood taken, that's a whole different story. I'm not okay. But when I'm getting a shot, it's a lot easier on me because nothing's leaving my body.
Sure.
So instead, I close my eyes and I pretend that I'm walking into the land of Narnia from the wardrobe. Okay? So I'm going through and I feel the evergreen needles brush my arm, and I just think that was just an evergreen needle.
Nerd!
Visualization. One of us uses it and one of us doesn't.
You're such a dork.
Thanks, Blake.
I mean, Narnia.
I mean, it doesn't need to be Narnia, but that's kind of what I picture. Okay, because I like snow, right? Brings me joy. I feel safe. So I'm just saying, I can appreciate Harry needing to fake himself out.
Mr. Tumnus, put away that needle, Mr. Tumnus.
Just brushing against the leaves, the pine leaves.
Oh, man.
So they open the Chamber of Secrets, thanks to Mr. Tumnus, and they slide on down.
That's my new shirt, Mr. Tumnus with a big needle.
No one will want that one. No one will want that.
Oh, man.
And Lumos, Lockhart makes the biggest mistake. Free of charge.
Free of charge. What?
What do you mean, what? Lockhart makes a huge mistake.
No, I know. He does.
Yeah. I'm just letting you talk because you stopped laughing, so I thought you should...
No, go ahead. Wait, what is the big mistake? I don't know what...
He takes Ron's wand away from him.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I thought you meant like he... never mind. Whatever.
Takes the wand, and collapses the inside of the tunnel. So he and Ron are stuck on one side of the boulders, and Harry has to go get Ginny by himself.
What do you think, Mary, about the author splitting or creating a situation where Harry has to be alone again at the end of the book? Why do you love it?
So something in this reread, you know, the Harry-Ginny storyline and romance, it's sometimes weird, sometimes great. You know, when she's young, she's like so obsessed with him. Fun fact, Kate Middleton had posters of Prince William up in her teenage room. So, you know, it's okay to have a crush on someone famous and mm-hmm. then you accidentally kind of end up with them. But what's interesting here is that Harry has been paying attention to Ginny this entire book. You know, the Weasley family has taken him in and it is like family for him. And he's been noticing when she's acting poorly. And when he hears her name, it really, really hurts him as well. What I love about this is that Harry and Ginny are the only two individuals who are possessed by Voldemort. And that is one thing that nobody else will understand. And to me, it reminds me of Bilbo and Frodo, how like they get it and nobody else gets it.
Frodo smells.
Okay, just put your like Frodo hate, leave it at the door. But like they go through something, you know, and he knows like he needs to go save her in general. He doesn't know exactly what's been going on, but he knows that he needs to go save her. And I just love it. Like, yes, he's only 12 at this point, but I'm okay with it because mm-hmm. it wouldn't have been the same with Ron. You know, Ron can't understand this part. And this is something that is special between Harry and Ginny. And he does save her and she does apologize to him and comes clean with everything that happens to him. But the fact that this is something that they can bond over, I don't think it's like delved into enough. But to yeah. have been possessed by the Dark Lord at young ages and to have this like eeriness in it.
I really like that, Mary. That is definitely a thread that is not pulled in this series. That is something that is absolutely a binding force between two people.
I mean, she mentions it a little bit when he is obsessive with the Half-Blood Prince book, mm-hmm. but this is something, as I said, it's just something that the two of them can appreciate and understand. It makes you wonder, like, do they have nightmares? And are they like, no, I get it. I get it, man. Like, mm-hmm. so, and does this mean that Ginny can speak Parseltongue?
Well, she must have had to have spoken Parseltongue.
Does she remember how to do any of it?
No, I think that's as a result of...
Wouldn't that be cool if she remembered, like, some words and then she and Harry could be like... It'd be like Ping Latin, like pass me the extra pancake that Ron can't see.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I'm okay with Harry being alone because he needs to see Voldemort alone.
I think there's an argument here to be made that...
If Ron was here, honest to God, Ron would not have been able to handle this situation.
I think there's an argument to be made that the author needs Harry to do this on his own because it is... part of the process for Harry to really grasp on to his similarities with Voldemort.
Yes.
And if you have Ron there...
Ron would have just been a killed spare, in my opinion.
Yeah, he would have gone the route of Cedric Diggory. Like
yes.
That, he would have been the spare. Kill the spare. And Ron would have been the spare.
Yes.
I think it's a journey for Harry to... Even though it's convenient, again, that the author does this, Harry has to understand himself and he has to find the confidence within himself to fight these things, fight the specific structures and remnants of Voldemort, not only externally, but internally. I love how this is written at the end of the chapter. Mm-hmm. And he set off alone past the giant snake skin. Soon the distant noise of Ron straining to shift the rocks was gone. The tunnel turned and turned again. Every nerve in Harry's body was tingling unpleasantly. He wanted the tunnel to end, yet dreaded what he'd find when it did. And then, at last, as he crept up yet another bend, he saw a solid wall ahead on which two entwined serpents were carved, their eyes set with great glinting emeralds. Harry approached, his throat very dry. There was no need to pretend these stone snakes were real. Their eyes looked strangely alive. He could guess what he had to do. He cleared his throat, and the emerald eyes seemed to flicker. "Open," said Harry in a low, faint hiss. The serpents parted as the wall cracked open. The halves slid smoothly out of sight, and Harry, shaking from head to foot, walked inside.
Gryffindor. Excuse me.
Absolutely Gryffindor.
Gryffindor. Like, it, is scared yes. to his bones, shaking, dry mouth. And I have to do this. He thinks to himself, Ginny could already be dead. She's already been down here for a few hours. Yep. I can't spend time trying to dig Ron out and then have bumbling baboon Lockhart. I have to do this. And it's scary, but I have to do it anyway.
Absolutely. And it's much like how the last book presented a series of trials for Harry, and each of the trials was met by each of the characters and culminating in Harry's, well, not culminating in Harry's trial, but culminating in the fact that Harry was left alone. This is similar, though very different. Mm. This feels a lot, I hate this term because it's so cliche, but it feels so much darker. It feels so much more personal.
It's like Anakin walking in Yoda's crazy cave where he has to go face Darth Vader.
You mean Luke?
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Luke. Yes, absolutely. That is...
Like you need to face your fear alone.
That is an absolute apropos example.
Narnia, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. Come at me, bro.
Nerd!
So many good nerdiness things happening here. It feels very personal for Harry at this moment, and it is defining who he is as he's going through this dark tunnel. I mean, it's no mistake that he can only see a few feet ahead of him. Mm-hmm. He's going, and he's going not because it's Ginny, not because it's Hermione, not because of it's Ron. He's going for the sake of going, and not only going for the sake of going, but not knowing and still choosing to do it. Here's another great nerd reference for you. It reminds me of the Matrix Revolutions at the end. And
they all just became one big crazy blur of slow motion.
Yeah. At the end, Agent Smith is asking Neo, why, Mr. Anderson, do you persist? And Neo says, because I choose to. I always found that some of the most remarkable writing ever. Mm. There's no need. There's no reason. I just simply choose. And Harry is choosing. He's defining who he is. Even though he is terrified, he chooses to go because that is his... He's discovering this is his most important and defining characteristic. It really is well written. Extraordinarily well written.
Aside from the part that you hated on the beginning.
Yeah, the logic, because the logic is what it is. It's the book needs these things to happen, but the theme and the thematic choices of it all are brilliant.
Okay.
I like that. That a lot. Good. All right. Marvin, are you ready to get into the different perspective? Do you have one today?
Did you have one?
Oh, no, I don't.
Okay.
But you did the last... I tried to do the last one. You usurped it, so why don't you...
I mean, I feel like I kind of snuck one in with McGonagall, but sure.
All right. Ready?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Buddy.
I'm Ron Burgundy?
It's not like a real sentence, but sure.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, here's a question. How long have you had your mascara? Because if you have not switched out your mascara this season, you are in need for a new one. And it will take you into early 2021. New year, new lashes. And I will let you know that if you need new mascara, I'm going to hook you up. Just search Minute with Mary on your social media of choice. Because November 1st, I got some cool things coming at you, bro.
Yes, you do. I like it. All right, let's do it. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Elvis Dumbledore.
Oh, good one! Dumbledore, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I could be in Mallorca right now. Let me tell you. I'm on house arrest. Because I don't think they sent him to Azkaban.
No, I don't think they did. No, he just was. He's probably off.
Yeah,
drinking in a couple.
They put
of
him
pops.
In like. Yeah, they put him in like a nice hotel, like the Omni or something. And they gave him a company card.
Yes. Well, they gave you a company card.
Yeah, sorry. They gave me a company card because I'm Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, sure.
And they basically told me, like, you're just not allowed there until we figure things out. Good luck. But the cool thing is that while they don't figure things out, I have to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
I have knit so many scarves. One for every day. All different colors for the houses. I made one for Snape because he loves green.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. As does McGonagall, but don't tell anybody. You know what I mean?
Like, I think that's why Dumbledore, they secretly are like in love with each other.
Yeah. So
secretly.
Who?
Snape and McGonagall.
They're friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're frenemies. So I knit everyone a scarf. I've been writing in my diary, you know, my journal. Mm-hmm. I've been watching a lot. And by a lot, I mean a lot of Dawson's Creek. Yeah, it's the late 90s, early 2000s.
Are you a Pacey guy?
I don't even know.
You don't even know?
I really like this Jen character. She just comes in out of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And she's just feisty and confident. I just think that's really interesting. So McGonagall's told me she doesn't want me to be worried, so she's not really updating me on much. I assume things are okay.
Well, you know what happens, Dumbledore,
what?
When you assume things.
What?
You make an A of yourself, and you make an A of everybody else.
Oh, well, but it's not my problem, Mon.
Because I'm out.
Yeah.
Because you're out. How much cake are you eating?
There's this thing
uh-huh.
that the Muggles have called room service.
It's really?
Like house elves. But they knock on your door. It doesn't just...
No.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So I'm having a great time. I don't know what's going on at Hogwarts, but I'm having a blast.
But you're coming back, though. Like, you found out that you got to come back. Are you sad about it? Or are you happy? Because
what? Hold on. What do you mean I'm coming back?
You told McGonagall that you're coming back. It says it right here in this book. It says Dumbledore's coming back. Everybody was all happy that you were coming back.
She made some assumptions, okay?
You know what happens when you make some assumptions, right?
We'll see it when I see it.
Do you feel bad? Do you feel bad that you left everybody in the lurch?
No, listen, man. I've done my time.
Uh-huh.
They can figure this one out. You know? That one day, I'm not going to be here.
Hopefully that won't happen for a long time. It's going to happen sooner than we think.
You know? You got to every once in a while see if they can drive by themselves. Just saying. And while you're taking a break, have some sherbet lemons, loads of cake.
So much cake. What's your favorite cake right now?
Like still chocolate.
Cake, that's your cake at the moment?
Yeah.
That's a little bland.
What else? End scene.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Ready for some emails?
Yes, please.
All right.
We just went like way too deep on that.
Let's do it.
Oh, my Seriously, hair. Where is Dumbledore?
All right, so we got one email in here. It says, by the way, ladies and gents, if you are joining us live, now is the time to get your questions in there. Please ask your questions in the respective chat forums that you're in. And Mary, what do you need to put in front of your question?
A lightning bolt emoji.
And of course, if you're listening to this on the podcast app of your choice, you are not alone. You can email us your questions, and whatever question that you have, we will put on the next episode and talk about it. So, email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. Marvin,
yes.
What is the question that we have today from Bethany?
Hey, Mary and Blake, I listen and love all your podcasts. Thanks for providing Lumos in a time of Knox.
You're welcome.
Here's my question.
Yep.
Why did students not learn about Tom Riddle's transformation into Lord Voldemort in their history of magic class? Learn history in order to prevent repeating itself, etc. Thanks for all you do. Signed, Bethany.
That is a
Take
great,
it away, Blake.
That's a great question.
I'll hit up the Google machine, but I have an assumption. But you go. What do you think?
Well, I think... Oh, that's a great question. Everything that the text provides to us right now is don't talk about Voldemort. Don't talk about him. Don't mention by his name. Don't say anything. Because the more that you say it, the more real he becomes. And we're trying to move on. And they might just be too close to the Wizarding Wars and what happened with Voldemort. And is he still out there? Is he not out there yet? Are people too scared? Is it worth teaching? Is it... Well, I mean, if, I think logically it's worth teaching, especially coming from someone who has a degree in history. But I think to the average person, it might just be too painful. It might just be too much. Maybe they don't know enough. Maybe they're not sure about Tom Riddle necessarily. And the transition is, in fact, Voldemort really Tom Riddle? Do people know that? That's the real question.
Well, his professors must have.
Yes, that's true.
Like Slughorn remembers teaching Tom Riddle as yes. Tom Riddle.
Right. But
so it wasn't just Voldemort. It just wasn't Dumbledore. Like Dumbledore knew, okay, it was Tom Riddle. He did the Chamber of Secrets. I don't necessarily know if every, yeah, because nobody else really knew or pulled two and two together that it was Voldemort, aka Tom Riddle, who opened the Chamber of Secrets. Mm-hmm. But they know that Tom Riddle became Voldemort. Here's what I think.
Sure.
I think it's covered in the history of magic. I do. Okay. I just don't think that the kids learn current history of magic anytime soon. They're in their first year. They're learning about like old warlocks. Plus, they're always asleep in Bin's class. He probably mentioned it at some point. Or actually, he doesn't believe in the Chamber of Secrets, but it doesn't mean that he couldn't have referenced Tom Riddle becoming Voldemort. So A, either they slept through it, or B, it's covered in like their seventh year history class, if they even choose to continue with history.
Well, the way that I look at it almost is September 11th, right? September 11th was a big event.
But it's not in the history books right now.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Are they just too close? Right. Like 10 years after...
50 years ago.
What, Voldemort?
Yeah.
No, Voldemort at this point right now in the story was in the early 80s. So it was... Oh, did you say 50 or 15?
I thought 50, but never mind. Maybe my timing's off.
Right. So, yeah, no, your timing is definitely off because he disappears the night that Harry repels the Avada Kedavra. So,
yeah, but that was 15 years ago. But I'm saying Tom Riddle as a student, known as Tom Riddle, once he leaves Hogwarts, he goes by Lord Voldemort.
Right. But the history of it all, Tom Riddle, the kid, isn't yeah. historical. It's his transition to Voldemort and what Voldemort does. So that, let's just say, takes place between 78 and 80 yeah. and 80.
I bet you it is covered in like a seventh year History of Magic AP class that like two kids sign up for each year, if that. Because, you know, okay, so like when I learned history of music, we started all the way back to like Gregorian chants.
Sure.
And then as we'd go further and further and further, we eventually learned like the Beatles. But we didn't learn the Beatles right away. We learned the history, starting with the oldest and then moving forward. And I think that that's how history of magic is taught. So that's what I think it is. I think you don't learn it.
But there's one other thing that comes to mind here.
What?
You may not have learned academically about the Beatles, but there is an inherent pop culture knowledge about the Beatles that would present them
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, because it's not the scariest thing in the entire world, and we say their name. You, like, don't yeah. say Voldemort's name. You just, like, we don't do that. Like, think about our kids. Are we talking to them about Hitler?
Yeah, but they're 7 and 5.
Yeah, but when are we going to talk with them about Hitler? These kids are 11 and 12. I'm not talking with them about Hitler then.
Yeah.
So instead, you'll be like, oh, this is, you know, pilgrims, and this is, you know, whatever. Like, I'm just trying to think
George
of what
Washington.
I learned at their age. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, really scary but modern things is sometimes too scary for kids, and especially when they do these, like, crazy horrific things, it's matter that you also need an older student to be able to digest.
Yeah, and that's why I wonder... That's why I wonder if they're just too close. Even though within the text they're 15 to 20 years after Voldemort's exploits. The other thing that happens too is that nobody knows where Voldemort went.
Yeah, so that's the other reason they want to teach it. Like, think about things that our country has messed up royally.
Sure.
They don't teach that to you in school. Because they're like, and then we landed on the moon. Yay! We did such a good job. You know?
Yeah.
Like, let's just skim over racism
and yay,
slavery.
We won the Cold War. Yay! Berlin Wall came down. Yay!
Yeah, I think that that's what happened.
Yeah, I would probably tend to agree with you on
or
that
Or they
one.
Slept through bins.
All right. So the next question we have from the live chats comes from Victoria. Why does Ron still have Spellotape Wand.
Want to know why I would still have a spello taped around? Because yes. I'm Ron. Because I wouldn't tell my mom.
Good
I'd
one.
I'd be so afraid of telling my mom.
Getting that howler probably was a little intimidating.
The last thing I'm going to do is tell my family that I broke my wand in that car crash when I crashed their car.
That's true. That's a good point. That's just one more thing to get angry about.
But the cool thing is that I found one outside the window after I tossed Lockhart. Maybe you can run down and grab that one.
The next one comes from Tanner Gilbertson. Tanner asks, what would you ask a snake if you could speak in possil tongue? I'll tell you what I would ask. You want to know what I would ask?
Yeah.
How do you move?
You wiggle.
Yeah, but how does that happen? You don't got legs.
Yeah, it's just forward momentum. Right?
No, but
like
it ain't
shark.
Forward. It's like left and right,
some,
up and...
Some go sideways.
It's
some
weird.
Go sideways.
How do you move? How does that work? Like, what does it feel like? Don't all have legs, but still move?
Yeah, that's the thing I would ask. Like, how does it feel? Like, if you're being touched on that much of your body the entire time, does it just feel like something's, like, rubbing, like, all over you, and you're just like, too much sensation?
Way too much. Nah. What happens if it's, like, hot out? Does it burn?
You just say, ouch, 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 ouch.
Let's see if we have any other questions. Everyone's talking here. Denise asks, what if your nose gets itchy? You itch it.
You just rub on the ground as you go.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Well, on that note, I think we're good with our questions, and we are set to close the show.
All right, let's do it, shall we?
Yes. Thank you to anyone and everyone who are members at jointhenerdclan.com. You've heard us say this a bajillion times, but truly, you mean the world to us. You honestly keep us going. You allow this media company to continue to bring Lumos in the time of Nox, and we are still going forward. As we said, we're actually adding more to our weekly repertoire, starting just this week with This Is Us 2, and then our Join the Nerd Clan only podcast about the Crown.
In other words, Join the Nerd Clan .com exclusive. Mm. See, there you go. I ain't a professional for no reason, I'll tell you that.
So if you enjoy our content, and if you want access to the Crown podcast that's going to be coming out mid-November, please head on over to jointhenerdclan.com, where as little as a cup of coffee, just once a month, will help contribute to making this possible.
And you get to be a member of all the great things that we have going on over there, and part of that great community where people are just free and open to talk about whatever the heck they want. And
plus, our Christmas card is coming up soon. In our Christmas gift, which, if you like, I don't know, Harry Potter, or if you like, I don't know, Outlander, you're going to want to make sure that you're on our list.
Something very special I'm putting together for
something
everybody.
Special. Something special. So we send Christmas cards, we send gifts. You can see all that and the rewards at jointhenerdclan.com. On that note, my name's Mary Larson.
And I'm not a snake.
Ew.
Because I got to have legs.
Mischief managed.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast. Now, with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.